And good morning, everybody. Welcome to Today. And Hoda's here with me at this morning because this is a sad morning here at Today and at NBC News. Just moments ago, NBC News Chairman Andy Lack sent the following note to our organization. Dear colleagues, on Monday night, we received a detailed complaint from a colleague about inappropriate sexual behavior in the workplace by Matt Lauer. It represented, after serious review, a clear violation of our company's standards. As a result, we have decided to terminate his employment. While it is the first complaint about his behavior in the over 20 years he has been at NBC News, we were also presented with reason to believe this may not have been an isolated incident. Our highest priority is to create a workplace environment where everyone feels safe and protected, and to ensure that any actions that run counter to our core values are met with consequences, no matter who the offender. We are deeply saddened by this turn of events, but we will face it together as a news organization and do it in as transparent a manner as we can. That is the statement from our chairman, Andy Lack, and we just learned this moments ago, just this morning. As I'm sure you can imagine, we are devastated and we are still processing all of this. And I will tell you right now, we do not know more than what I just shared with you, but we will be covering this story as reporters, as journalists. I'm sure we will be learning more details in the hours and days to come, and we promise we will share that with you. Mm-hmm. And Hoda, I mean, you know, for the moment, all we can say is that we are heartbroken. I'm heartbroken for Matt. He is my dear, dear friend and my partner, and he is beloved by many, many people here. And I'm heartbroken for the brave colleague who came forward to tell her story, and any other women who have their own stories to tell. Mm-hmm. And we are grappling with a dilemma that so many people have faced these past few weeks. How do you reconcile your love for someone with the revelation that they have behaved badly? Mm-hmm. And I don't know the answer to that. But I do know that this reckoning that so many organizations have been going through is important. It's long overdue. And it must result in workplaces where all women, all people, mm-hmm. feel safe and respected. As painful as it is, this moment in our culture and this change had to happen.
Yeah, it did. This is a very tough morning for both of us. I've known Matt for 15 years, and I've loved him as a friend and as a colleague. And again, just like you were saying, Savannah, it's hard to reconcile what we are hearing with the man who we know, who walks in this building every single day. We were both woken up with the news kind of pre-dawn, and we're trying to process it and trying to make sense of it, and it'll take some time for that.
Yeah, we're processing it with all of you at home, mm-hmm. and we promise to be transparent and be straightforward and continue this important conversation.
Absolutely.
So Savannah and Hoda are heartbroken. So how do you feel? Can you push past all of the labels? You know that they're East Coast liberal media elites, and feel their pain. Are you heartbroken for Matt Lauer, for his wife Annette, who I understand has gone back to her home country, gone back to Amsterdam? Are you heartbroken for their three children? Are you heartbroken for the victims of the sexual misconduct? Now take and multiply that by the dozens of other stories of sexual misconduct that have hit the news in the last few weeks, and the perhaps hundreds of victims, and understanding that that is just the tip of the iceberg, are you brokenhearted? Now add on top of that all the stories that are hitting the news headlines in the last few months of leaders who lie to us, of abuse of power, of misconduct, of greed, of corruption, of dishonesty, and then the stories of bigotry and racism. And are you heartbroken? Now bring it on closer to home, because all of those things that we read in the headlines that are happening in Hollywood and New York and Washington, they're happening right here in the greater Elgin area. And they are impacting the lives of people that you know and that you work with. So are you heartbroken? Because if you are not, you are not living like Daniel. Daniel was so heartbroken when his boss, King Nebuchadnezzar, When Daniel understood the judgment that was going to come on him, Daniel was so heartbroken he was speechless. And he finally blurted out, "How I wish this would happen to your enemies and not to you." And Daniel's boss, Nebuchadnezzar, was a brutal, ruthless, bloodthirsty dictator who butchered Daniel's people and took Daniel captive. And still Daniel was heartbroken for the toll that evil and sin were taking in the lives of people that he knew. So are you heartbroken about the toll that evil and sin is taking, not only in our society, but in the lives of people that you know? Because if you're not, if all these headlines are not breaking your heart afresh, then we're missing the whole point of the book of Daniel. In the clip that we just played, you heard Savannah say, "We are grappling with the same dilemma that all of you are. How do we reconcile our feelings for someone we love who has behaved badly?" And then did you hear what she said? She said, "I don't know the answer to that." Do you hear the cry of pain? "I don't know the answer to that." Now take that cry of pain and multiply it by all of the friends and the relatives and the victims of people who are behaving badly in our nation and in our community, who cry out, "I don't know the answer." Friends, we know the answer. We have the answer. We know that evil is real. We know the high cost of sin. And we have experienced forgiving grace and the transforming love of Jesus Christ. And we know that He is the only answer. He is the only hope of the world. So are you living that answer? Are you sharing that answer with all of the hurting people around us? Because that is the reason that God orchestrated the story of Daniel, and that is the reason God preserved the story of Daniel for us, that you and I would know that our highest calling is to live for the Lord in a godless and corrupt foreign land like we are today. And like Daniel, we are to live the answer and to speak the answer into the lives of hurting people under difficult circumstances today, just the way Daniel in his day. And if we finish the study of Daniel today, and your heart is not broken afresh by the toll sin is taking around us, and your heart is not committed anew to live and to speak boldly for the Lord who is the only answer and the only hope, then our study of Daniel has been a failure, no matter how inspired you've been. We will have missed the purpose of the book. We will have missed our calling. And if we are not careful, together we will miss God's hand of blessing on our church. I love all the activities this church does, the things that Daniel was just announcing to you. But no matter how many wonderful socials and festivities and events that we do in this building, if we are not living the answer and speaking the answer in a way that impacts the people in our lives outside this building, we are missing our vision and we are not on track for the vision of this church. We're not fulfilling God's purpose for our lives or our calling. So have I been clear enough on this? Now, some of you are thinking, "But Dick, I can't live like Daniel. I mean, Daniel was too perfect. Daniel was some kind of spiritual superhero. I can't be Daniel." So I want to assure you, Daniel was not perfect. Daniel was a very flawed human being, like all of us are. Now, we don't know what the flaws are. This story doesn't tell us the flaws because the story isn't about Daniel. The story is about Daniel's God. But he had problems. I mean, maybe he chewed with his mouth open and people sitting near him got sprayed, you know? Maybe he told such awful puns that people groaned when he started to tell a joke. Or maybe he didn't have a sense of humor. He was too busy. Maybe he was impatient and sometimes insensitive and demanding on the people around him. Daniel didn't get everything right. But Daniel got the big things right. And that's why God was able to use him in a special way. It was when I was beginning my career for a Fortune 500 company, and I was just a farm boy. I was in way over my head with multinational responsibilities, multi-million dollar contracts, and I was afraid of making a mistake. So I was having trouble making timely decisions. And my boss took me aside and said, "Dick, you got to stop worrying about making mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. Identify the four or five big things that you have to get right and concentrate on those. Get the big things right and the rest will follow." And that was good advice for my career, but that was also good advice for living, because you and I will never get everything right. So concentrate on getting the big things right, the things about your values, about your spiritual priorities, about your character. Get the big things right. And then regardless of what happens in your life, you will have a life that you can be proud of and God can be proud of. But as the men in the headlines have shown us recently, no matter how rich and powerful and famous and successful you are, if you don't get the big things right, you fail. So what are the big things, the four or five big things that each one of us has to get right? Well, that's where Daniel can instruct us and teach us, because that's what Daniel was good at. He didn't get everything right, but he got the big things right. And because he got the big things right, God was able to equip him and empower him and enable him and use him in a special way to influence the people in his life and influence people all down through history. And that's what God wants to do in your life and my life when we talk about living like Daniel. It's not being a spiritual superhero. It's getting a few big things right so we are available and ready for God to use. Are you with me? Okay, let's look at what Daniel got right and what you and I need to get right. Getting the big things right. The first big thing is a confidence that God is in control of my life. We need to be confident that God is in control of our life. Unfortunately, in America today, we are losing our confidence. And increasingly, Americans are living in fear. And that's according to a study that was released just last week by the American Psychological Association. Let me read you a couple of excerpts. Americans are having a collective freak out. Fear and anxiety about politics and the future of our country are a significant source of stress for nearly two-thirds of adults in the United States. The uncertainty and generalized anxiety people have about our country are unique to this period in recent history. Social divisiveness worries 60% of Americans. 43% are stressed about health care. 35% are fearful about the economy. Other causes of anxiety are distrust of the government, media negativity, crime, terrorism, and international conflicts. And many of those surveyed admit they are losing sleep and experiencing headaches or other physical signs of stress. So the problem is, when our confidence is in our government, or when our confidence is in the essential basic goodness of people, we will live in fear. Daniel lived fearlessly in a society that was much more dangerous and much more corrupt than ours, because he was confident that God was in control of his life. So we read Daniel say in chapter 2, "Praise the name of God forever and forever, for he has all wisdom and power. He controls the course of world events." Daniel had an unshakable confidence that God was in control of the universe, of world events, of human events in the control of his life, so Daniel could say, I will not eat that. I will not bow down to that idol. I will not stop praying for 30 days, regardless of the consequences, live or die, because my God is in control of my life. And if I die, he will meet me in my death. And if I suffer, it's because he allowed my suffering, and he will meet me and escort me through my suffering. I am safe in the Lord's hands, so I will do what is right, and I will leave the consequences to God. Because I am confident that God was in control, and because Daniel consistently lived with a confidence that God was in control over a period of many years, eventually, evil King Nebuchadnezzar believed in Daniel's God, and when he believed, he said God was in control. He declared, he that is God has the power to do as he pleases among the angels of heaven and all those who live on earth. No one can stop him or challenge him. Daniel and Nebuchadnezzar believed in this great, good, and glorious God who is big enough to use everything for good. Who was big enough to redeem sexual perverts and liars and racists and bigots. Who was big enough to heal broken hearts and homes and marriages and lives. A God so great and big and in control that in the end we can be confident God wins. And when he wins, he will reward those who served him faithfully through the battle. Just listen to the very last verse in the book of Daniel, Daniel chapter 12, 13, as God promises Daniel, as for you, go your way until the end. You will rest, and then at the end of the days, you will rise again to receive the inheritance set aside for you. And I love the way that one of the paraphrases puts it. Daniel, be faithful until the end, and you will rise from death to receive your reward. And that's God's promise to you. Don't give up. Don't lose hope. Because I'm still in control and your life is in my hands and you are precious to me. So hold on. Stay faithful. In the end, I will give you life that never ends and I will give a reward that exceeds your wildest expectations. So don't lose hope. Live with the confidence that I am in control. That leads us to our first question, the big question. Does the way I live reveal that I doubt God's control? Does the way you live show that you are confident or that you sometimes doubt God's control? Because when we sometimes doubt God's control, our lives will either be filled with fear and worry and anxiety and stress, or we'll go into hyperdrive and we'll work too much and we'll manipulate and we'll try and control to protect ourselves. So which way do people describe you? The people that know you best, do they say you're a worrier? Do they say that you're a workaholic? Or is your life so calm and serene, even in a crisis, that it shows you are confident in God's control, even when your life seems out of control? If we are not living with a holy confidence in God's control, if we are slipping into worry and overwork, then we're not living the answer for the world to see. So get the big things right. A holy confidence that God is in control of your life that sets you free from worry and overworking. The second big thing to get right is a conduct that displays God's work in my life. A confidence that God is in control of my life, a conduct that displays God's work in my life. All those men whose lives or reputations are going down in flames seemed to think that character doesn't matter that much, right? That's what you can get away with, that character doesn't count. But character does matter, character counts. Now, Daniel lived with such a godly character and conduct that the people around him saw it. And his boss, King Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuchadnezzar's daughter, the queen mother to Belshazzar, both said about Daniel, "There is a man in your kingdom who has within him the spirit of the holy gods." Daniel lived in such a way that other people saw there was something different and something godly about him. His conduct and his character displayed God's work in his life to the people that were watching. And that was never more true than years later, when all of Daniel's enemies were trying to dig up dirt so they could have him executed, and they gave up in disgust and were told they couldn't find anything to criticize. Daniel was faithful, honest, and always responsible. Now, why was Daniel faithful, honest, and always responsible? Because those were God's standards, and he was going to live by God's standards, not by anybody else's, because he was going to live to please the Lord and nobody else. He didn't compartmentalize his life and live one way at work and at school, and a different way at home, and a different way when he was at church with his church friends. And the consistency of his character and his conduct was such that his enemies could not find anything to criticize. So would your enemies have to say you are always faithful, always honest, and always responsible? Does your character and conduct display God's work in your life? You say, "But Dick, you don't know my life. I mean, that kind of godly living in my circle of friends and my profession, that would cost me big time. That's really hard to do." Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the point of the story of Daniel, isn't it? I mean, when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were told to bow down before an idol statue or else be thrown into the fiery furnace, they said to Nebuchadnezzar, "We want to make it clear to you, Your Majesty, that we will never serve your gods or worship the gold statue you have set up. We understand the high cost of godly living. We understand it will cost us our lives in a very gruesome and painful death. But we would rather lose our lives than lose our character. We would rather stop living than stop serving and glorifying our Lord." "There's lines," they said, "that we will not cross." And that brings us to our second big question. The big issue question this morning: what are the lines that I will not cross? What are the values that you will not sacrifice? What are the actions that you will never take? No way, no how, under no circumstances, no uh-uh. Because all these men whose reputations are crashing around us, it seems that they never drew those lines in the sand, did they? They never said, "That's a line I will not cross. I will not violate my marriage vows. I will never treat women disrespectfully. I will not lie. I will not do anything I intentionally know is dishonest or unfair to others. I would rather suffer loss and pain than cross that line and sacrifice my character and my service to God." So what are the lines that you will not cross? Do you know them? Have you written them down? And have you shared them with other people who can hold you accountable? Because if you don't identify the lines you won't cross before you have to make the decision, you'll drift over the line. And if you don't have people to help hold you accountable, you'll be tempted to do whatever you think you can get away with. If we are not committed to a godly character and conduct that displays God's work in our life and means there are lines we will not cross, we will never live with a godly character that is the answer that the world is looking for, the answer to all the moral failure around us. It was 1992. Joe Stoll, who was president of Moody Bible Institute at the time, went to Russia. He met with a group of Christians, mostly pastors, who had spent 10 years in the Russian prison gulag system for the crime of being Christians in communist Russia. And they described to Joe how they were sent to these prison camps and how the punishment was to break big rocks into little rocks using sledgehammers. And they said, but as we swung the hammers, we sang hymns to Jesus and lifted our voice together. And it infuriated the guards who kept telling them to stop, and they wouldn't stop. So one night, the garrison commander had the guards get all of the Christians out of the barracks in the middle of the night, in the dark, in the cold, in sub-zero weather, and forced them to stand in the courtyard and forced them to sing hymns to Jesus. And they stood there in the dark and the cold and sang hymns until they started to drop from cold and exhaustion. And the next day, when they were breaking rocks, they sang hymns to Jesus. And the next night, the garrison commander had them out in the dark and the cold singing till they dropped from cold and exhaustion. And this happened day after day for several days. No sleep, overexposure. They are getting sick. They are exhausted. And they never stopped singing until the night the garrison commander slipped into their barracks under cover of darkness and said, "Tell me about this Jesus that you're willing to suffer for." And that night he bowed and accepted Jesus as his Savior, because these people's character and conduct displayed God's work in their lives, and there was lines they would not cross regardless of the consequences. Gang, we don't need more churches. We don't need more slick programs. We need more men and women who are willing to live lives of godly character and conduct to display God's work in their lives so they can see God is alive and morality is not only possible, it is the best way to live. And they see it through us. A confidence that God is in control of my life, a conduct that displays God's work in my life. And the third big thing that we need to get right is a conversation with God at the core of my life. Now, I know this was our whole topic last week, and we're not going to spend a lot of time on it, but we can't skip it, because it was Daniel's conversation with God at the core of his life that was the secret that made him available and to be used by God in his life. It was the secret that enabled him to live all of the other big things right. So we read Daniel prayed three times a day, just as he'd always done. And he says, "I, Daniel, learned from the word of God." Daniel had a conversation with God at the core of his life, talking to the Lord and listening to the Lord in prayer and in Bible study. Sir Isaac Newton, English physicist and mathematician, considered by many to be one of the greatest scientific minds of all time, once said, "I can take my telescope and I can look millions and millions of miles into space, but I can set my telescope aside, go into my room, close the door, and get down on my knees in earnest prayer, and I can see more of the heavens and be closer to God than with all the telescopes in this world combined." And I believe that described Daniel's conversation with God. He met the God of the universe, and he saw glimpses of heaven itself. Daniel's conversation with God was at the core of his life. Talking to the Lord in prayer, listening to the Lord in Bible study, a conversation with God that was so rich and deep that Daniel knew the right godly conduct to do in each situation. And that conversation with God not only showed him the right conduct, it gave him the confidence that God was in control even when Daniel's life was out of control. It's been said, we mutter and sputter, we fume and we spurt, we mumble and grumble, our feelings get hurt. We can't understand things, our vision grows dim. when all that we need is a moment with Him. The more time you spend with the Lord, the more you'll love the Lord. The more you love the Lord, you'll live with the Lord. When prayer is a conversation at the core of your life, it will give you the confidence that God is in control of your life, and it will show you the conduct to live, and you will fall in love with the Lord, so you want to have more conversation with the Lord. So it's that conversation with the Lord at the core of our life that empowers us and enables to live the big things right. So that comes to our next big question. What are the spiritual disciplines I will not neglect? Big question in your life. What are the spiritual disciplines I will not neglect? Daniel did not find the time to pray in his busy schedule. He had to make the time to pray. And as we saw last week, if you do not have a scheduled time, a secluded place, a submissive heart, a scriptural springboard, and a sustained habit, then that conversation with God will never be at the core of your life. Will you not be able to recognize and respond to the Master's voice? You will not have the confidence He's in control, and you will not know the right conduct in difficult situations, and you will fail at the big things of life. So what are the spiritual disciplines that you will not neglect? Are they written? Are they scheduled? And are they protected? Get this thing right, and you'll be able to live and get the other big things right. Well, the fourth big thing we need to get right is a conversation with others about God's work in my life. A conversation with God in the core of my life, and a conversation with others about God's work in my life. Daniel was fearless telling other people about God's work in his life through his 80-year life. When he first met him as a teenager, he is saying to this very dangerous king, "There is a God in heaven. The God of heaven has given you sovereignty, power, strength, and honor. There is a God in heaven who is more powerful than you, Nebuchadnezzar, and you owe him allegiance. And he gave you everything you have, and you owe him everything you are, and you ignore him at your peril." And not just Daniel speaking in Nebuchadnezzar's life, but Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego speaking into his life, as they said, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God who we serve is able to save us, and he will rescue us from your power, your majesty. But even if he doesn't," they lived for God and they spoke of God at great risk. They, like Daniel, had conversations with other people about God's work in their life. And because Daniel and Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego had these ongoing conversations with other people, even in difficult or life-threatening circumstances, Nebuchadnezzar one day, years later, believed. And what's the first thing Nebuchadnezzar said after he believed? He says, "I want you all to know about the miraculous signs and wonders that the Most High God has performed for me. How great are his signs, how powerful his wonders. His kingdom will last forever, his rule through all generations." The first thing Nebuchadnezzar said is, "I want everybody in my kingdom, the largest kingdom in the world, to know how great Daniel's God is, to know the wonderful things he has done for me." And when God is alive and active in your life, like Daniel and like Nebuchadnezzar and like Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego, you will want everyone to know about the wonderful things God is doing in your life. And nobody will be able to keep you quiet. Daniel never stopped talking about it. Years later, he says to another king, King Darius, "My God sent his angel to shut the lion's mouth so they would not hurt me. My God, the God that you were going to kill me for worshiping, is the one that rescued me." Daniel just won't shut up. He can't stop talking about this God who does wonderful things in his life. And because of his conversations, not just Nebuchadnezzar turns to the Lord, now Darius turns to the Lord and says, "The God of Daniel is a living God. His kingdom will never be destroyed. His rule will never end." And he rescues and saves his people. Listen, the important part of the story of Daniel is not how he survived the lion's den. There's not even any evidence that Daniel was all that concerned about whether he survived the lion's den. The important part of the story of Daniel is that he had a confidence that God was in control. He had a commitment to godly conduct and character regardless of the cost. And he had a conversation at the core of God that allowed God to empower and equip him and use him when he was walking so closely with the Lord and so in love with the Lord he couldn't keep it to himself. He had to tell other people about what God was doing in his life. And as a result of that, three different kings of three different empires turned their hearts to the Lord. Thousands of people were influenced in Daniel's day, and hundreds of thousands have been influenced down by the years because Daniel got the big things right. He walked so closely with the Lord, he naturally and gratefully had conversations with others about the Lord. And that takes us to the fourth big question. Do I naturally, gratefully share what God is doing in my life? Do I naturally and gratefully share what God is doing in my life? Because the natural product of a regular conversation with God at the core of your life will be a desire to have conversations with other people about what God is doing in your life. You just can't keep quiet about God, just like Daniel was. You have to share the lessons you're learning, how you're growing, how God is answering prayer, the good things that he is doing in your life, how much you love him like a newlywed. You just can't stop babbling and telling other people how wonderful your new spouse is. Like someone who is so excited about a book or a movie or a restaurant or a vacation, they want to tell all their friends because they want all their friends to experience what they have experienced. You will share with the Lord, with other people, because you want them to experience what you have experienced. You just can't keep God's story to yourself. You want everyone to know. The fact is, if you are not naturally and gratefully telling other people about the good things that God is doing in your life, it probably means God's not doing that much work in your life because you're not letting him do the work. Because you're not focusing on the big things. You're not quite willing to trust him and put your confidence completely in him. You're not willing to make a commitment to godly living because of the cost that might come along with it. You're not willing to discipline yourself to spend time in conversation with God. You're not willing to step out of your comfort zone and have those conversations with other people about God. And because of those things, God's not at work in your life, so you really don't have anything to share with other people. And I fear this is the big dirty secret of most Christians today. We have lots of excuses why we don't talk to others about God's work in our life, but the number one hidden reason we don't want to talk about is God's not doing that much work in our life. We're not sharing the experience because we don't have the experience to share. So Daniel calls us, get back and get the big things right. How important is this? It's important to the Matt Lauers of the Word that desperately need forgiveness and redemption and a second chance. It's desperately important to the Savannah Guthries of the world that are struggling with how to reconcile their love for people who behave badly. It's desperately important to all of the friends and the relatives and the victims of people who behave badly, who desperately need to find some way to deal with the pain and find some healing in their life from this experience. So does your heart break for them? You know, about 15,000 people die every year just in Kane County that have no relationship with Jesus Christ and are hurling to a Christless eternity. Does that break your heart? People will believe in Jesus when you and I live the answer and speak the answer into their life because we are experiencing the answer in our life because we are concentrating on the big things. We are confident of God's control in our life. We are committed to godly conduct. We've disciplined ourselves to have a conversation with God at the center of our life, so it overflows naturally and gratefully, and we can't help but tell other people about the wonderful things that God is doing in our life. We will not reach the greater Elgin area for Jesus Christ by having slick programs or amazing outreach strategies or a sophisticated marketing program. We will reach our area for Jesus Christ when, like Daniel, we are living God-honoring, God-saturated, God-intoxicated lives. So does that describe you? Does that describe Elgin Evangelical Free Church? One more big thing to get right. Only five. You can keep them on one hand. You can remember them on one hand. The fifth is a devotion to God that defines my life. And this one actually summarizes all the others, doesn't it? A devotion to God that defines my life. As King Darius said about to Daniel, may your God, whom you worship continually, rescue you. Did you catch that? All the people around Daniel knew that he worshiped God continually. He never stopped worshiping. He was never off the clock. He was never off duty. He was never offline. He was always worshiping and serving the God that he loved. Worship was not something Daniel did on Sunday morning. He walked into the worship service late. And maybe if he liked the style of music, and maybe if the preacher wasn't too boring, and maybe if the service was inspiring, he'd get something to take home out of it and say, that was nice. Worship was something Daniel lived to do. It was what he lived to do. Adoration and devotion burst from his confidence that God was in control. Adoration and devotion burst from a conversation with God that was in the center of his life. And adoration and devotion played itself out in the godly conduct of his life and the conversations he had with other people in his life. There was a devotion to God that was the defining characteristic of his life. Is that the defining characteristic of your life? With the people you work with, you shop with, the neighbors around you, the relatives that you spend time with at Thanksgiving or your will at Christmas, say the defining characteristic of your life is your devotion to God. Would God say it's the defining characteristic of your life? Mother Teresa once said, by blood and by origin, I'm Albanian. By citizenship, I am Indian. By religion, I am Catholic. By calling, I belong to the whole world. But my heart, all of my heart, belongs only to Jesus. Is that true of you? Does he have all of your heart? That's our final big question this morning. Does Jesus have all of me? Does he have all of me? Are there parts of you that you're holding back? You're just not willing to fully put your trust in him, so you supplement it by worrying and working? You're not willing to make a full commitment to godly character and conduct in all circumstances, only if it doesn't cost too much? You'd like to have a prayer life, but you're not willing to discipline to carve out and protect the time for the Lord. And what are the conversations with other people that you're avoiding, that you know God has been calling you to have? What parts of your life are you holding back that are keeping God from having all of you? Would you do me a favor? I mean, right now, we're going to have communion in a few minutes. And communion is always a time to rededicate and reconsecrate ourselves to the Lord. In preparation for communion, would you identify which of these five big things you need to work the most on? And would you just kind of circle it right now and make a commitment that later today you'll spend some time with God and you will work on a plan. Say, God, I want to get the big things right like Daniel. Show me today how I can improve in one of these five areas and develop a plan and share it with someone who can hold you accountable. Now let's prepare our hearts to worship Daniel's God by saying together Daniel's words. They're the final verse on your sheet. Would you read these out loud with me as we prepare our hearts for worship? O Lord, you are a great and awesome God. You always fulfill your promises of unfailing love to those who love you and keep your commands. But we have sinned and done wrong. We have rebelled against you and scorned your commandments and regulations. But the Lord our God is merciful and forgiving, even though we have rebelled against him. We do not ask because we deserve help, but because you are so merciful. O Lord, hear. O Lord, forgive.